Thank you. My name is Lee Waters. I'm director of the IWA, and thank you very much, Leighton, for that thought-provoking speech. Lots to digest there. So what I hope to do is to draw upon our excellent panel, but also to draw upon you, because as ever with IWA events, the people in the audience are at least as good, if not better, than the people on the panel. So we need to make the most of the wisdom of the room. So just a quick range of introductions. You have the proper introductions in your pack. From left to right, we have Sir Paul Williams, obviously the chair of the Williams Commission Review, with a rich background in public service and a great reputation as a leader in the NHS, particularly. Professor Laura McAllister, trustee of the IWA, all-round good egg and wearer of many hats, academic and civic leadership. Councillor Phil Bale, leader of Cardiff Council, and Professor Veronica Hope Haley from Bath School of Management. So plenty of expertise for us on the panel. So just a quick set of reactions, I think, to start. Leighton was candid at the beginning, saying he wasn't going to mention the elephant in the room. That doesn't mean we can't. But let's first react what he did say before we start talking about what he didn't say. So Paul, your thoughts on what you heard 1 year after your report.
Well, almost 1 year to the day. So this is welcome news as far as I'm concerned, and I'm sure my other commission members who are in the room tonight, because whilst the debate has concentrated on local government reorganisation, the report was about public service governance and delivery, and there were 62 recommendations in that report. And I think, just from my sort of personal background, that leadership is probably the key one. And we had this conversation with Leighton about why didn't we put leadership first. Well, there were five dimensions, and we felt they were all equally important, interrelated. But at the end of the day, I think that unless we actually grapple with this issue about why in Wales we have poor and patchy services, and the biggest employers and probably some of the most highly paid jobs to public sector leaders. And I think, you know, what we've had is an industry of producing reports and reorganizations and have not concentrated on outcomes. And I think it's a travesty. And until we actually grapple with this issue and start and ensure we can change the whole cultural approach, it's just simply not good enough that we have second best. And one of the retorts we had time and time again from public service leaders in Wales when we were taking evidence was best practice is a poor traveller, almost as if that absolved them from delivery. And as Leighton said, at the end of the day, to benchmark against Wales is really a recipe for mediocrity. You have to go out and look for world-class benchmarking and then find out why on earth can't we do it in Wales, or more importantly, how we do it, and it's by engaging, it's by the way in which you can carry organisations with you, carry the communities with you, have those difficult conversations and step up to the plate. All very difficult, but I think unless we actually deal with this root and branch, what we'll have again is when Jeremy Beecham, you know, said to the people in the room when he presented his report, you've got 5 years to do this. When we looked at it 10 years later, you had local service boards that were no more than a bureaucratic process. No delivery in terms of the individual in the street making sure that those services were fit for purpose. So I think, I'm hoping tonight that this is a really exciting chapter of rolling forward improved public service delivery in Wales.
Just before I move on, just to pick you up, there's lots there, but just to pick you up on something there you said. So there's no response to Beecham, there's no response to Simpson, there hasn't been much response to your report.
No.
Why do you think that is, and what can be done about it?
Well, I still think we have a culture which actually ducks performance and outcomes. I really do. I think we just become almost experts are producing reports with no responsibility. This has to change.
Okay, we'll come back to that, I'm sure. Laura, your responses to what Leighton Andrews had to say?
Well, I thought it was extremely refreshing. I think, as Paul has said, we've talked far too much about structures rather than behaviours and values up until this point when it comes to public service delivery. And for me, as somebody who kind of straddles the academic environment with being a public leader, what's disappointed me most, really, I think it's two things, having been in a position of leadership for 5 years. First of all, the timidity of the Welsh public service, that there's very few people there who really want to lead and are confident about leading, and they tend to hold us back. Those of us who do, I hope, have a vision for what we'd like our sectors to be like, tend to get frustrated by a few things, really. Massive bureaucracy, real reluctance to kind of share outcomes across different elements of public service, and even agree on simple things like strategic KPIs when the outcome is very, very much the same. And then picking up the one of the latter points that Leighton raised about diversity, which, you know, is something very close to my heart. And I don't mean that just in terms of representational diversity. The other thing I've been extremely disappointed in is just the kind of lack of different thinking in Welsh public service. You know, I feel instinctive about pushing at boundaries that are set before me, but there's not that many people in my experience who don't just accept what they're told and what they're told to do. So in those terms, we don't have a great current cadre of public leaders who are a bit different, you know, and a bit charismatic and a bit challenging. And the ones that Leighton mentioned at the start of his speech, of course, were all a bit like that. And if we look at all of the leaders we respect in the valleys of South Wales, for example, they're all a little bit odd, in all honesty. You know, I can think of a whole host of them. They're all a little bit quirky and a little bit different. And that's the type of people we need, actually, not more of the same, not kind of the machine leaders or managers, as they mainly are, some people who are a bit different. And that's what diversity means, really. It does mean bringing more women and younger people and people from different backgrounds to the table, not because they are women or because they are younger, but because they will have different experiences and think differently.
Let's hear it for odd people. I've been waiting for somebody all my life to say that. Phil, you're still relatively new to leading Cardiff Council. There's been a very depressing story so far about the quality of public service leadership. Do you have a case for the defence, and what's your reflection on what Leighton had to say?
I think it's a really important moment, actually, in terms of what Leighton was saying there. And the starting point for me is always to be open in terms of the issues and challenges that we face. So certainly when I came into post, there were some major challenges that were raised with the council's services. You have to, I think, shape a very clear vision for an organisation at the outset. So we were very clear with our staff, engaging them in terms of the agenda. And we've got three very clear visions around openness, fairness in terms of what we do, and partnership working, which I think is incredibly important. Even though we're the largest council in Wales, I think there's been a tendency to think that we don't need to engage with others, that we can do things ourselves. And it comes back to the point that the minister was talking about with a larger system. You know, we've had to go out and start benchmarking ourselves. It's very difficult to compare ourselves to other Welsh councils. We've joined the Core City Network, which has been incredibly useful. I cannot underestimate the benefits I've seen inside of the organisation with the scrutiny function, with the comparisons in performance data. And I think it's also really helped to raise our profile in terms of lobbying and really reaching other networks that we've not been able to. So I think that's something that we're doing, and it's really important that we continue to do. But also the council itself, I think with our new vision around a cooperative council, working with communities, I think that's very, very difficult to achieve in practice. And I throw it back to actually to Leighton, that if we want to achieve that vision, I think it's going to be so important that we look 360 and we look at how Welsh Government and UK Government are as well, because often there is that top-down approach. And if we want to encourage our communities to get more involved, I think we've got to really challenge ourselves to look at the way that decision-making takes place. We can legislate. We're very good at legislating in Wales. I think Paul, in his report, was talking about the complexity of the system. And I think we do have to address that. We have to be very clear in our priorities. And when you're in a climate with very limited resources, you have to really focus in on what's really important, what will make that difference, not just on a Welsh context, but actually internationally as well. Because, you know, things like our education system are absolutely vital if we want to achieve on an economic level. But also, I think if we look at certainly why I got into public service was to reduce inequality, and I think they are absolutely linked. And I see my role as leader of Cardiff as really trying to address some of those deep-seated issues as well.
But the two examples you gave, the cooperative councils,
yep.
Most people here won't know what that is. The core cities network of English major cities are seen by
and Scotland. We've got Edinburgh and Glasgow in there as well.
Absolutely. Right? They're seen with suspicion. They're treated as resistance. How do you, as a leader, how do you overcome that?
I think you're strong. If you identify early on what needs to happen, and certainly when I took up post, I could see that we'd become very inward-looking as an organisation, and we had to. It was all about the place. It's all about Cardiff. People are incredibly proud. It's the same across Wales, that we had to reconnect the organisation with the place, and we've been doing that ever since. It's not easy. It's there are significant issues in terms of performance of the council. We are putting in place quite a few measures, though, in terms of internal challenge, which I don't think have been there in the past. And I think that's helpful as well. So being open and honest with what we're doing, I think the open data comments are really refreshing. I think that is something that we've got to do much more of now. The capacity issues within local government and other public services are diminishing with the budget cuts. If we make that data available to others, they can do some wonderful things with it.
Okay. Professor Hope Haley, what's your reflections from outside Wales and reflecting on the evidence of what you've heard?
Okay. Well, thank you very much for inviting me to be here tonight. I've read the white paper on reforming local government, and as I read it and I picked it out, what was striking for me was actually that something that Sir Paul has focused on, which it was all about structure. And one of the things that struck me as I read this white paper in preparation for this was that actually what you were trying to talk about was service transformation. And that structure is just one of those aspects, but that in actual fact, what concerned me about the white paper were issues that we would call, in sort of organisational change terms, capability issues, leadership issues. So, you know, we can talk about structures, you can talk about boundaries, but essentially what you're talking about and what the white paper seems to be calling for is service improvement, cost efficiencies, and structure is one of those things, but leadership is absolutely critical. So it's fantastic to find that being reflected upon, because I wondered if we were going to spend the evening talking about structures. So it's great that it's all about leadership. So that's one comment, and I can say a lot more about some of the things I reflected on reading this white paper. But the second thing I'm going to say is really, what you have to understand is that this is not just about Wales. I have published 3 reports since the financial crisis on trust and trustworthy leadership. And what you are experiencing in Wales around this crisis in leadership is being experienced across the UK, across Europe. And you need to understand that, partly to stop beating yourselves up about being Welsh. And, there are a lot of conversations going on about this in the private and the public sector across Europe. And what has happened, really, is that since the financial crisis, levels of uncertainty and concern about the future have been raised in people's minds. And there are greater levels of uncertainty and anxiety in society, greater questioning over integrity, benevolence of leaders. And actually what is needed at the moment is for a new generation of leaders to demonstrate to the great general public that they are highly trustworthy. They are a new generation engaging in the way that all the my 3 panellists have said, in a way that will enable employees and members of the community to take some risks, try something different, do some innovation. And that really is the issue of leadership. It isn't. I know there will be specific problems in Wales, and I don't know what those specific problems are. I mean, I've read the white paper. I understand a few of them. But this is something bigger than just Welsh leadership. And it is about what's happened in the last 6 years. And we've just got to rethink the way we promote leaders, we develop leaders. And, you know, listening to the speech, one of the things I would really hope that if you're going to put in public sector leadership training, please do it with the new model of leadership, not an old model. Use these new things that the public are being very, very clear about what they want to see. And I'm happy to talk about that. I've researched 22 different organisations, local authorities, national governments, private sector organisations, and I can tell you what people want and what they don't want, but I'll stop there.
OK, I'd like to come to the audience very shortly. I should probably say the white paper isn't published yet. You should probably tell us too much.
Oh, sorry. That's the July one.
The old one, OK. I'm sure it'll be much the same.
I think that was from a Google search.
OK. I thought you'd been given a sneak peek.
No.
So just back to Sir Paul and just what Professor Hope Haley was saying there. She's suggesting maybe we're being a little too hard on ourselves, that many of the things you describe are not unique to Wales.
Well, they're not unique to Wales, but I think actually, you know, we just have been very good at the analysis and very good at the policy, but poor on the implementation. And I think just one of the points I'd like to make about leadership, because it, you know, rolls off the tongue very nicely. We need to make a distinction between management and good technical management. And not all managers are leaders, not all leaders are managers. And I think one of the things we need to be really looking at in this debate when we talk about management is making sure that we have a leadership, is that we have good technical competence in management. Yeah. Management's about doing it right. Leading's about doing the right thing. Very important distinctions there. And I think in terms of picking up the pace, and particularly around this issue about one of the problems I have, particularly with some so-called inspirational leaders or charismatic leaders, is they love the innovation. My view is, I'll give you the permission to innovate once you've achieved and developed and rolled out best practice universally in your organisation. Then you can go and innovate. Because what we got is 1,000 flowers blooming. We can't roll it out. So then there needs to be a serious conversation about the technical competence of leadership, of management, and how it works hand in hand with leadership, and how some managers graduate to leaders. And the other point that Leighton made, and you know, you made in terms of new styles of leadership, is, you know, there isn't just one way of doing it. You need different sorts of leaders with different sorts of problems, and people come in and come out of the situations. And so it's a dynamic.
Okay, so can I see some hands? I'll take a cluster, then I'll come back to the panel. The seating is not ideal, so bear with me.
Thanks very much. Bradley Davis, retired, but spent many years in the further education sector. And it was, well, thank you, first of all, Leighton, for sharing your vision with us and the parameters, and also pointing out some of the limitations of that period of austerity. It's a kind of question to you, Leighton. Perhaps you can put me my understanding of what you said right, really. I mean, is it fair for me to say that you have reservations about the role of the private sector in public sector delivery? I had the feeling, please tell me I'm wrong, or all right, to my interpretation of that, that you put your foot on the private sector a little, perhaps, albeit it was a hush puppy foot, but you mentioned the private sector, and then you all of a sudden your elbow went out and you nudged it one side, and then you carried on about public sector delivery. And I would like to know, perhaps not what now. But, I mean, do you mean that essentially public sector service means largely public sector delivery? Because there is a question about the, sorry, our professor on the right-hand side mentioned the new models of leadership, and of course they can be found in the public sector and in the private sector and in the third sector.
Leighton's going to come back at the end, but he's going to have to resist for the minute.
John Owen Jones, 2 points, one on the discussion so far and one about structure. The panel talked a bit about challenge, but Leighton didn't, which is surprising since he's quite a challenging individual. I mean that in the kindest way. But Leighton did mention the Beecham report. And my recollection of the Beecham report was the big thing it said was that if you're going to eschew competition and choice, then you need to replace it with more challenge. I'm not sure that if Leighton agrees with that, and I'm even less sure that if many of his colleagues do. Question on structure, I'm afraid, is when the historic counties were first divided in the early 70s, the Labour Party's view at the time and the Welsh Office's view at the time was creating a valley-only authority would be to create an authority which had poor resources and would be economically unsuccessful. I see little in the evidence of the last 40 years to suggest the Labour Party was wrong in its assessment at the time. The Williams Commission was constrained and has produced a recommendation of 2 poor valley authorities. The leader in the Welsh office then was George Thomas, a Rhondda lad who became a Cardiff MP. This Rhondda lad, who also became a Cardiff MP, thinks, at least on that issue, he was right.
Okay, well, being as elephants have been brought up, perhaps we should talk elephants just briefly. Elephants in the room, that is. So let's just touch on that, and then we'll move back to the other stuff. But just, I'll come to the panel. But just your report, Sir Paul, we're talking about leadership, saying that small organisations find it harder to recruit and retain high-calibre leaders. So much as Leighton doesn't want to talk about reorganisation tonight, there is an inextricable link between tackling leadership and tackling structure, isn't there not?
Well, I think we saw it within the context of scale and capability. We're not saying that small organisations can't deliver some services, but they get stretched when they have to provide a range of services. And the problem is that leaders or good technically competent managers move on and like to work in organisations where there's a career path. So the issue for us was not saying big is beautiful, but there has to be a critical mass in terms of organisations where they, if they so wish, can grow their own, keep their own, and develop by working in concert rather like Leighton suggested in terms of an All Wales Academy or some sort of leadership vehicle to ensure that the continuous professional development and spread of good practice can work. So it was in that context of scale and capability. And I think, you know, we heard that some organisations in key areas like education, literacy was a part-time responsibility. Well, that can't be right. But that organisation just didn't have the resilience to be able to make that a very senior role. So, you know, it's having this conversation in a sensible way to say, you know, we're not saying big is best, but just look at organisations and are they resilient? Are they competent to actually produce the goods across the board? Or if not, there are alternative models, there may be partnership models or whatever, because you know, scale and scale and scale. But it needs to be worked out rather than moving from one extreme to another. That's the problem. You know, we just need to have a sensible conversation about what the art of the management is, the art of the possible.
Laura.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me the focus on structure has come because of something that Leighton mentioned in his speech, which is the existing lack of one notion of public service in Wales. And so we've kind of distilled from structures, and especially with regard to local government structures, a sort of, I think, an exaggeration with identity, actually, because whilst place is really important, I think if you look at the research on what citizens want in terms of service delivery, they'll put excellent service delivery ahead of identity and geopolitical boundaries any day of the week. Mm. So I think that's partly why we've got to the obsession about structures. If there were to be a drive towards one public service which is more fluid and within which leaders can move, then I think the notion of where services are best delivered would take on a completely different form. It wouldn't be that every local authority has to be identikit and has to deliver the same services. Different kinds of regional alliances could be built up in a much more organic way. But I think we've got two very different concepts quite muddled when we talk about structures, which by and large is focused on local government in all reality. I know the Minister raised issues about other reviews, but the truth is we're talking about local government. And in all honesty, the public service is much bigger than that and could be much more effective if we took it in a holistic way.
So Phil, what's stopping us? Why are we failing to address this question?
Just picking up the point around what the public think, we've just done the Cardiff debate for the last few months, and actually it does absolutely reinforce what you've just said. Yeah. People are saying that the quality is what matters to them. It doesn't matter about the location of the service. And that's something that we're taking on board now very much in terms of making budget decisions for this year and in future years as well. But I think there's also an issue around Wales not being sort of an isolated country. What happens elsewhere does impact us. And increasingly now it's been interesting to see how the city region agenda, the big city Devo Met debate in England, what that could mean for Wales in terms of the competitiveness of our economy. Some of the big infrastructure investment decisions that are being taken on a UK level now, HS2, etc. And I think we shouldn't shy away from working in partnership with others outside of Wales as well, where it suits our needs. And I think the talks we're having at the moment with Bristol about working together is something that we have to do. If you are responsible for 20-odd% of Welsh GVA, the wider region, Cardiff City region, is around 50%. You know, if you do not grow your economy, Wales as a whole suffers. And we've got to be mindful of that side of strategic working, as well as the more localised service delivery as well.
So the WLG has suggested this model of combined authorities.
Well, no, I don't think the WLGA suggested it. I mean, it's something that the leaders... something that is being looked at across the country. And I think it's something that the leaders themselves are considering as an option. But there are many different ways in terms of councils working together. So
can you just give us a little bit of insight into the politics of this? Why is it proving so difficult for local government leaders
to work together?
What, to follow the recommendations of the Williams Review? Start.
My view has always been that for me, the interest in that report, the Williams report, was around performance. And it's a huge part of the agenda that's been missed completely. And I think that's a great shame. And that's why I think today's debate has been very useful. I can't speak for my colleagues. I think what's happening now, though, is that the financial realities of austerity are actually getting ahead of the policy. So we are now seeing decisions, changes taking place that are forcing people to respond and to make choices, difficult decisions in some cases. And that comes back to leadership again, because you absolutely, when things are going wrong or you recognise you've got to make those decisions, you've got to make them, you know, and you do it on an evidence base, you do it because it's the right thing to do. I think we've got to move forward in terms of that leadership agenda to make sure that change is happening.
Okay. Veronica, just on terms of austerity and the evidence about cost-cutting of millions rather than restructuring on savings, because the WLG have come up with figures saying that the amount of money you'd save from the Williams recommendations would be 80 million a year, and the money being taken out of the system by austerity by 2018 is 877 million, the figures they used. So in terms of cost-cutting, this is a drop in the ocean, isn't it? What's your experience on that?
Well, what I have seen work really well, say some of the London boroughs, and these probably will seem very obvious improvements, and you may well be doing them already in Wales, but a lot of the London boroughs are sharing services across the central platform services. So they're sharing, they have shared HR services, they have shared procurement services, they have shared information system services, because I mean, what you should be focusing on is the delivery of local services. You don't want to replicate endless amounts of HR departments or information systems departments. There's huge cost savings to be had there. I think also there's I just want to respond to a couple of things about the leadership thing, if I may. One of the things that's come through from our research, what people just say, please don't change the chief executive the whole time. All right? If you want me to grow to trust a leader, and you want that leader to stay and implement some change rather than talk about it, let them stay for long periods of time. And that points to bigger organisations, whereas you're saying people make their careers there. I mean, if you look at some of the great leadership development organisations in the world, they are huge. You know, people make their life in Shell, and they make their life in Shell, and it means that by the time they've got to the top of Shell, they really understand that organisation, and they've been exposed to a lot of different management functions. They've had some fantastic leadership development because the size of that place enables them to have a lot of experience. They've got some of the top talent management. And, you know, we shouldn't be afraid of size. Size does not mean you sacrifice local responsiveness. So I think that's one of the things. I think the other thing, I'll just use a personal example. I was very struck with Paul talking about a literacy provision of half a person in one authority. 2 weeks ago, I was under the knife. I had surgery. I live in Bath, and I had surgery, and I was really lucky to have surgery in Southampton General. And what I'm having surgery for is only delivered in about 3 hospitals in the UK. And, you know, the NHS is just fantastic. It enables me to go somewhere else. There's only about 3 or 4 surgeons in the UK who can do the operation that I was having. If I had been restricted to my area, I mean, the Bath consultant said, I can't do this. This is what you need. I can't do it. I mean, that's an appalling situation to be constrained. Bath isn't a particularly big hospital. It's not a teaching hospital. It's a very good hospital. I'm very happy with it. But I'm extremely pleased to be able to be referred through the National Health Service to another provider who can actually meet my needs. And that's the glory of the great big National Health Service. And there's something to be learnt about that. You know, and I my guess is that that is what some of this reform is trying to get, is to ensure that where you've got specialist needs which can't be provided in smaller councils, that everybody in Wales gets a chance to have access to that. Okay. I'm presuming that is some of what you're talking about in the breadth. So just a personal example. I'm very happy to be part of a large health service.
there's lots of hands. I'll take a clutch.
Hi, Andy Bevan. I'm on the sheet as University of Wales Trinity St David till the end of July, working on a rural alliances project, which is about protecting and extending public services in rural areas based on fieldwork in 6 European countries. So I take Veronica's point that we don't only need to learn from our own backyard, but look more widely. Also, a year ago, the IWA was good to publish a paper I wrote on citizen service for young people, not the kind of 6 weeks kayaking that David Cameron is trying to pass off as a citizen service programme, but a full year, properly paid, trade union rights, which would give a whole cohort of young people experience of the public's service ethos and trade union rights. I want to say something about that. Leadership, I'm sure, is important at the top. And quite a few people have said that the Porsches in Pembrokeshire, was it, and Big Bucks remuneration packages have not actually solved our problems. And I'm not surprised, because we're not that kind of country. Wales is different from England overall in the sense that we're poorer and in the sense that we are probably a less unequal society, let's put it that way. And I was really interested in what Laura said about diversity, about, let me put it a different way, democracy, leadership from the grassroots. Where did Jim Griffiths come from? Where did an Eirin Bevan come from? There are only three trade union representatives in the hall here today. It's a great turnout, but there's something very strange about a debate on public sector reform where the workers' representatives are not given some kind of pride of place. And we've got to work on that, I think, to put it right. What do you think?
They were certainly given a chance to come, Andy. Let me just go around the room. Alan, you had
your hand. Leighton, I thought, framed the nature of the Welsh difference very well in, as I would put it, community-based, collaborative, but ambitious. I've always believed in an entrepreneurial public service. That's what Leighton seemed to be underlining as our need in this country. The IT and the internet has changed the world in which we live and in which we deliver services. And I was intrigued by the sentence in Leighton's contribution where he talked about developing digital services and wanted to see that accelerated and the announcement that he's made. But looking at the public service leadership panel in the slides that he provided to us, that accelerated shift to digital services is very important. But I think it's some 10 years ago now that the UK Internet Governance Forum, which I then chaired, pointed to central government of the danger of the digital divide and that you enable lots of people but leave behind those who aren't able for one reason or another to make use of digital services. So that how you make sure that access is there for everybody has to be built into the design right at the beginning. And frankly, central government has failed on that. In general, those who are left behind are left behind, and it's not part of the general design. Within the public leadership panel there, there's an emphasis on effective services for vulnerable groups. So there does seem to be a key there, and I'd love to hear more from Leighton about his vision on how that's to be developed. We're moving, for instance, in terms of victim services, which I will have responsibility for, April, as Police and Crime Commissioner, to move from what is the offence to what is the vulnerability of the victim as the criterion for the type of support. That's the sort of example I was thinking of. Love to hear more from Leighton about his vision.
Okay, so some hands at the back.
Peter Price, I've been much struck that the panel has this evening stressed very much issues of leadership, of changed culture in management to achieve greater effectiveness, of the changes harnessing the digital revolution and data, not on structures. In terms of priorities, now that doesn't exclude changes of structures, but in terms of priorities, that's where the stress has come across this evening. And I want to ask you, therefore, if we were at the same time as trying to achieve all these far-reaching changes, to attempt at the same time major local government reorganization, would we find ourselves with the people who we're trying to get to do all these changes being focused very much on the short term of their own jobs, of changes which are going to enable them to meet cuts tomorrow rather than to achieve over a period of time a longer term change? Can those two things be reconciled? Where really are the priorities?
Okay, I'll take a few more just to make sure everybody gets a chance.
Hi, it's Anna Nicol. I'd like to welcome the discussion, the focus discussion tonight on leadership and values. I think it's been really refreshing and positive. And also a blatant plug that I've just recently started working for Nesta as a Wales manager for Evidence Exchange Programme, which the aim of that is partly about trying to make sure that good practice travels better, particularly across different parts of the UK. So hopefully can work with other people in this room in taking that forward. And also just a quick comment as well, that as Leighton Andrews mentioned, part of making kind of leadership work is having a flexible, adaptable structures where leaders can be responsive to what's happening on the ground, and certainly discussion around kind of more digital services are often fast moving. And there's a danger with some of the legislation that's going through perhaps at the moment that that might be locking in some kind of structures or processes which are not which are too bureaucratically focused and not flexible, potentially including kind of reorganisation itself.
Okay, I'll take just one more.
Calvin Jones, Cardiff Business School. I wonder if the panel think that you can legitimately engage in a conversation about increasing the aspirations for leadership and performance in particularly local government when it's been the most heavily cut of all the public services in Wales, with the implication that either it's going to do less or it can't be trusted with the money. I mean, are there mixed messages there?
Okay, I'll come back to more questions in a second. I know there's more I want to ask you, but perhaps you can start off that last one. So, Paul, I guess one of the comments on your review is that there's been not enough of a debate about what is local government meant to do. Do you think that debate still needs to have some more thought?
Well, if they're talking about form and function, absolutely. But I mean, come back to this issue of austerity. I mean, how long is it going to take for the penny to drop? You know, I was chairing the 2025 think tank and produced the report The Perfect Storm. Why are we surprised that the austerity period is going to be longer than deeper than people ever imagined? But we're talking to people in the public sector as if, like, just hunkering down and nothing changed, we'll get through this. You will not. So, and if you thrive as a manager and a leader, you step up to that challenge. And you have to figure out different ways of doing things. Otherwise, you shouldn't be there, quite frankly. So I know that might sound rather harsh, but I think that is the challenge. And that was a joy for me when I was a leader and a manager, dealing with the challenges in front of you. I mean, I'm sufficiently long in a tooth. I can remember periods of no growth, right? We have now a generation of leaders and managers that have only actually worked in a growth situation. It can be different out there, right? And this issue about, ignoring the private sector, ignore it at your peril. You have to learn from the private sector. I mean, I'm a qualified chartered manager as well as being a health service manager because I wanted to learn from the private sector. I've been to Harvard, whatever. You have to actually sharpen your game, and you certainly need to be connecting with the staff and the trade unions because, you don't have the exclusive rights to all the best ideas.
So
coming back, to the central point, I think, if we get into victim mode, it doesn't help us. We have to actually operate with the challenges that we have. We don't have a choice.
On your point about the private sector and learning from them specifically, yes. What did you think of the minister's comment that the private sector should not be running for-profit services in the public
sector?
Well,
I'm a public sector man through and through, but I've trained and worked in the private sector as well. And I think there's a place for the private sector. But I think why were we surprised that this Hinchinbrook fiasco failed? Hinchinbrook actually was a failing NHS hospital. The private sector rode in with all these ridiculous claims, and then they pulled the plug on it. I just take the view that if money is short, I don't particularly want to be having a model that has to actually build into it a profit element as well. It just doesn't seem to be a right way for me to provide a public sector service. That doesn't mean I can't be working in the private sector and sometimes they can do better than me. But that has to be, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of cold managerial judgment as to what is the most appropriate.
Okay, Veronica.
I also just want to share something. I want to pick up on a number of points. In the 22 organisations we looked at, the mix of, we looked at the church, we looked at the BBC, we looked at the NHS, we looked at local authorities, national governments, and a host of private sector organisations. One of the reasons I've crossed the bridge tonight is there is good news from this. All of them, every single organisation we were working with was implementing what we call negative change. All right? They were either downsizing, delayering, divesting, merging. Everybody had to respond to either the crisis or the subsequent cuts in public sector. Every single one of them. Some of them were able to respond and actually maintain or increase levels of trust in their senior leadership. And this was a complete surprise. And we then went on in the subsequent second and third report to try and understand what was going on. Now, there's a couple of things I just want to pick up on that the people have made. One is actually the point about union representation. To our complete amazement, partnerships came out really, really well. Because in a partnership structure, you are accountable as a partner to other partners. And the partnerships that we looked at, John Lewis, Ernst & Young, Norton Rose, were obliged to engage in accountability, justification, sharing of data as they implemented job cuts, wage cuts, etc., etc. But they came through well. Unionised organisations like GKN, Sunderland City Council did very well as well. But there seemed to be some accountability and some need to demonstrate and justify the negative changes you were making. Second thing that also would accord with what Sir Paul was saying is a number of the highly trusted organisations, John Lewis would be an example, sat down and had realistic conversations with the workforce about what you could expect from employment or from local services if you were the community in Sunderland City Council's case in a time of austerity. And they simply said, this is a time of austerity. 10 years ago was not. You can expect that from employment in a time of growth, and you can expect this from employment in a time of austerity. And let's have some realistic conversations with unions, with partnerships, about how we go forward together. And that was really interesting because it was the honesty of the conversation, not employer branding. We can offer you endless career development. We can offer you flexible working. Some of them said, some of the national governments said, we can't offer you flexible working anymore. We're going to have to, you know, really pull together. HMRC, peak tax times. We need you in this room. We need you working potentially 10 hours a day to deliver at peak times. We will try and give you flexible working back when there are peak times are not there. But what was important was an honest conversation about what you could expect from local services and from employment. We aren't in the same place that we were in 2004. And we all have to swallow that and get on with it and make sure that we are building a country that is fit for our children and not just for our particular needs at this point and our salary checks and our job security. I'm 58. I've had a great life. I want to create something for my children and employment for them and services for them. And we've all just got to get on and be realistic about what UK PLC and Wales PLC can afford right now.
Okay.
Sorry to be quiet.
Thank you. Time's ticking on. I'll come back to the rest of the panel in a second. There's a clutch of other questions. If you could be brief, I'd be appreciative.
Okay. Thank you, Lee. I'll try and be brief. Nick Bennett, Public Services Ombudsman for Wales. And I was, I confess, a member of Paul Williams's commission. In terms of the Raymond Williams test, I think I'm more hopeful than full of despair this evening. And I think Leighton's pretty much nailed a vision here in terms of, you know, the failings of command and control. But I think there is a challenge there to Leighton, perhaps a challenge to the panel, and something that I'd like to hear a response on. Because even looking at, you know, the very welcome good practice in Denmark, which talks about the need for, you know, a code of governance for chief executive excellence, even the first point here in Wales, I think, would be difficult for the chief executive and the political leader to clarify the managerial space available. From the evidence that we received in the Williams Commission, that the presupposition that that space is simply the property of the leader and the chief executive is certainly not true. Too many complaints that across the 20 fields of devolution, localities, local elected leaders were being told not just what to do, but how to do it. A combination of a various number of sins from Cattaise Park, including dreary managerialism. So I guess, you know, the challenge to you, Leighton, is well, whichever version of dreary, what are you going to do to nail it and make sure that the vision sticks and that we don't return to this again, perhaps in another 5 to 10 years? Thank you.
Okay, lots of hands. I want to go to somebody on the front line of this.
Liz Burnett, and I'm one of those rare breeds of female cabinet members in a local authority. At the last count, I think I was one of 39. I think only one in five cabinet members in Wales is female. And actually, with a portfolio that includes regeneration, economic development, etc., I think there are only three other people that have got portfolios in any way resembling that. I was really interested today to hear the conversation, which seems to be around where we should be already, which is that form should follow function. We really have not had this conversation. I am so pleased that we're having that. I was interested to hear Leighton talking about public services not being the right place for profit-making organisations. I think I'd actually go a bit further and clarify and say it's not for private profit organisations. I think it is exactly the right place for social enterprises to be flourishing. We talked about the need for leaders to be able to cope with change. There's actually a term for that. It's called tolerance of ambiguity, and it's actually found in all the textbooks around entrepreneurship. So what we actually need is a new breed of social entrepreneur in Wales. That's what we need to be fostering in terms of leadership. These are the people who they're talked about as being the power of unreasonable people. They will not put up with poor performance. They will drive change, but they will bring people together to do it. And we talk about charismatic leaders and all other sorts of leaders. We need to get those social entrepreneurs. They are pains to deal with, I have to say. But they are the people who are the change makers within our society, and we have to work with them. And they are quirky. So, you know, there are so many of them. We've been too patriarchal with our public services in the past. People need to be empowered. We need to deliver some services ourselves. We need to deliver an awful lot more in partnership. But we also need to accept that other people will deliver those services. In with that, we need to empower our staff. Yeah, we need to empower our staff. And we talked about citizen stories of the day. I'll give you a staff story. Sitting with a member of staff as we were throwing open our strategy to public comment, he was sitting there looking absolutely terrified. And I said to him, "It's scary, isn't it?" And he just looked at me and said, "Yes." Last week he said to me, "This is the only way forward, Liz, isn't it?" That's what we need to do.
Great. I don't think I'm going to be able to get around everybody, but I'll still try a few more.
Thanks very much indeed. Ruth Marks, Wales Council for Voluntary Action. And I'm picking up on the point made about the importance of trustworthiness, but hopefully linking a couple of comments that panel have made, and it is briefly. In order for the public to have trust in our public services across the piece, and trust in our public sector leaders of today and of tomorrow. Firstly, a point about working with leaders for us all to be part of the change. And secondly, for people who are interested in becoming leaders themselves and therefore increasing diversity. I'd be keen to hear, if the panel have time to share their views today or in the future, on how the third sector in Wales can help be part of the solution, not only with local government, but also across health. Thank you very much indeed. Dioch.
OK, I'm afraid we'll see how the panel goes, but I doubt we're going to have time, I'm afraid, to squeeze everybody in. I am very, very sorry. Laura, I want to touch upon diversity. Leighton has announced that in the white paper and the bill is going to be a legal duty on diversity. And I noticed also in Paul Williams's comprehensive report, there was a criticism of too many duties on local authorities. I think he noted 9 duties, and he said there's a danger of the whole trying to achieve change through requirements becoming a tick box exercise. What your reflections were on what Leighton had to say about diversity and the way he plans to achieve it.
Before I come to that, because it is relevant, I think the points that Liz and Ruth made are incredibly relevant about the voluntary sector, social enterprises and so on. We really haven't given the individuals and the groups that work in those sectors enough credibility and enough attention. In my sector in sport, if it wasn't for the voluntary sector in sport, there would be no sport in Wales at any level. That's the truth. A quarter of all people volunteering in Wales volunteer in sport. It's the absolute foundation of everything we do. And for me, we couldn't simply do our business without them. It's relevant to the diversity argument, actually, because in the voluntary sector are much more diverse leaders than there are in the third and private sectors. So by empowering them, by supporting them, and I don't mean necessarily supporting them with money. It isn't often what they're after, actually. It's learning and experience and hands-on practical skills that maybe professionally they don't have locally. If we can do that, we will, by nature of it, increase the diversity of the leadership cadre in Wales. So that's that point. In terms of the kind of hard and soft measures that you can implement to get better equality, I'm a big fan of all of it. I'm a big fan of quotas. I'm a big fan of duties. And the reason for that is because I am completely and incredibly disappointed at the rate of progress without those things. Mm. So, you know, I understand all the weaknesses of hard measures, but you tell me where not having hard measures has got us in Wales. So we've got to do something, and we've got to do something quite radical. The picture of local government, because we've talked about local government predominantly in terms of representation, is abysmal. And if anybody, and that, you know, therein lies the kind of elephant in the room. Mm. You know, people talk about identity and closeness to communities. Well, do they feel well served by the profile of a councillor in Wales who's over 60? Who's white, who's male, who has very little experience, actually, of most of the local services that are delivered through schools and education and various other mechanisms. So, you know, I don't buy this argument all the time about representation when we have such an ineffective representation structure in Wales.
OK, Phil, I'll come to you for any final reflections, but struck by what Leighton was saying about the need for public service leadership to change. But I wonder, the one bit of the public service he didn't mention leadership was the Welsh Government's leadership. He said leaders need to be generous and they don't need to be controlling. And is that a picture you recognise?
Oh, what a question. I think certainly I said earlier that the centre needs to change if this is going to happen, if we're going to empower communities. It's the same issue with Department for Communities on a UK government basis. We have to look very much at how we take away some of the silo working that takes place. I mean, Leighton's got a very interesting portfolio in the sense that it does cut across so many aspects of Welsh government. But I find it incredibly frustrating as a city council leader that I am restricted in so many things that I would want to do to try and address key issues or problems I can see. And the Welsh Government got issues as well. I mean, they do not get longevity of their funding settlements. So they are bounced in on an annual basis in terms of decisions that impact on us. We would very much like to be like Bristol, you know, have a bit more longer-term planning, because I think that also gives us some flexibility in terms of supporting communities. Because it's very easy to say that we want to get communities engaged and involved, but they are very fragile. And if you don't support people enough, if you don't have a broader section of support as well, because the councils are not able to do everything now as they were in the past. We're working increasingly with third sector partners to be able to provide that advice and support the workshops that need to take place to build that capacity locally. It's not easy, and actually the private sector does have a role there. If you look at banks and others where there are skill sets in putting together business plans, these are things that if I asked my office to do, I don't think they'd necessarily be the best people to do it. So we need to think outside the box in terms of addressing some of the challenges we face. But on the point on diversity, I think it's also really important that you know, at the moment, it is a horrific time to be a councillor or to be representing communities. I hope that doesn't put people off, and we have to look at other ways in which we can really make people aware of the benefits of being a community champion, because that's what it's all about. It's community leadership, that you are able to do some fantastic things. And if you just focus on the role of someone having to pass budgets that are decreasing all the time, you won't attract people in. And it's the same with staff. I mean, we're looking now, we can't pay, you know, huge rates of pay, but one of the schemes we're starting this year is to give staff the opportunity to buy up to 10 days holiday back. So it gives people the flexibility to remain in employment if they've got changing personal circumstances, and it saves money for us. So, you know, we just have to think slightly differently about how we get over some of these challenges.
Before I get the panel to finish off, is anyone got a burning point that they really want to raise before we do? Yes, we have two burning points. We'll be brief burning
points. Amanda Peters. I wanted to ask about PSMW, because some of the debates about leadership we've actually seen several years ago, and PSMW was funded a lot of money to actually produce a cohort of effective leaders and managers in the public sector, particularly in management, executive leadership rather than political leadership. I just wonder if the panel have any views on whether that worked.
PSMW, please.
Public Sector Management Wales.
Yeah, sorry, do indulge me. As a trade union representative, I thought I should speak. And one of the things that does, it's been a very interesting debate, and I think leadership is certainly key to surviving a period of austerity, but we're seeing a policy of endless austerity. And that is the problem. You compare yourself with Denmark, but Denmark has a more equal society than we do, and it has a distributive taxation system, which we do not have. We cannot survive austerity no matter how good our leaders are. That's why we need political leadership to oppose austerity. And I think the other point is that we cannot continue to improve public services, because that's what I'm hearing today. The vast majority of our public expenditure is on staff who actually provide those public services. Now, I hear what Veronica's saying, difficult decisions with trade unions. It's strange that trade unions are the ideal partners when you're looking at cutting people's pay and terms and conditions, but not so ideal in the good times. And there is only so much you can cut in terms of pay and terms and conditions, because then you just wither on the vine, because people don't want to work for public services. There is an elephant in the room, and that is austerity is not survivable.
Gosh, this room is full of elephants. So just the final two comments, if we could, before Leighton gets his chance. Veronica.
Well, I suppose I'll just pick up on that last point. I mean, I think you've come to a bit of a main question. I mean, the fact is that I think UK society over the last 20 years has a Scandinavian appetite for local services and a North American appetite for taxation. And until we have, and it is a political debate that has to go on, about what you can expect if you want low taxation in terms of services, and if you want Scandinavian type services, we're going to have to pay a bit more. It's not really about austerity, it's about how much we're willing to put into our put our hands into our back pockets and actually, you know, pay some more taxation to get some more services. That's what Scandinavia does. There's not been a lot of appetite for 50% tax amongst everybody, but that's the reality in the Scandinavian societies. So quite a big one. One of the things I would just say, hang on in here. Really, the leadership that I'm talking about, we came up with a phrase in the research from the practitioners. This leadership was not red cape leadership. It wasn't people running around like supermen, literally. This was a different kind of leadership that we were finding, much more about service, much more about a sense of purpose, much more about accountability into the workforce and the community. It's not about this old charismatic CEO, you know, the sort of Bob Diamond lot. This is a different form of leadership we're seeing. And I personally found it quite inspirational, what I did find. I remain a glass half full professor tonight.
Paul Williams.
I mean, first and foremost, I can't do anything about austerity. I mean, but the challenge for me is we identify and lost count at 900 organisations in Wales. Now, within that, there has to be a lot of wasteful bureaucracy. Just has to be. Now, if you start looking at the structural issues and then start asking constructive questions about, well, if organisations were working together and you develop synergy, that's bound to free up resources. If you start asking questions about engaging the community, about how to make the tough choices, that's bound to help. If you start asking what things could be done better through social enterprise, cooperatives, mutuals, or whatever. You know. So I just think there's still a lot to go for. Unfortunately, what I'm seeing is frontline services being offered up on the altar of retaining existing structures. That doesn't seem right to me. You know, I thought you need to start with protecting the frontline service as much as you can and see what you can take out in terms of back office. So Veronica's point, in our report, we recommended immediately to get on with shared services because it's low-hanging fruit. You know, where are we 12 months later? I don't know. So, you know, I just like to take the practical route in terms of what can be done. You know, I know it's tough, but I was told if I want to change the world, I'd become a politician. I'm a manager. So I just have to get the grips of what I think we can do.
And based on what you've seen in the last 12 months, are you optimistic?
I'm always optimistic.
Okay, thank you very much, all of you. Now, Leighton Andrews gets a chance to give us his thoughts on the discussion.
Okay. Thanks, Leighton. Thanks very much to the panel and to the questioners. John Owen Jones asked why I didn't do much challenge tonight. And I think really because I regard the Williams Commission as having laid down the challenge to public service organisations in Wales. I think that challenge is there. I think it's very clear. And I think what I wanted to do 3 months into the job, a year after the Williams Commission review, was more set out the vision for leadership in public services in Wales. And that's where I think we've got to start, really, if we're going to get people to think beyond a weary managerialism, Nick, not a dreary managerialism, though it could be dreary if it's very weary, and to take that forward. You made the point about Beecham saying, well, you need challenge if you're not going to have markets and different kinds of contestability and so on. I think that's true. However, one thing has changed radically, I think, since Beecham, and that is open data, the ability now to put data out there. It's impossible to hide from the data. It really is. I remember having very entertaining conversations with the teaching unions about whether it was possible to uninvent the Freedom of Information Act. Well, I mean, I told them it wasn't possible to uninvent the Freedom of Information Act. And the reality is data drives performance and you can't run away from it. And I think it's there much more publicly now than it was in the time of Beecham. In my first day or so in September, I asked for an implementation plan on the Williams Commission recommendations, and that was across the piece, and we are working our way through all of those now. And I agree with Paul that, you know, implementation is key. When I started as Education Minister, whenever that was, some time ago, I had a chart on the wall which said, better implementation, fewer initiatives, keep it simple. And that remains my kind of basic approach to many of these things, and I hope it will please Phil to know that in terms of the relationship between Welsh Government and local government, I do think we've got to focus down on a much more limited number of objectives and targets for local government. I think it's inevitable in a country the size of Wales, Welsh Government will expect to hold local government to account in fields like education and social services for performance. But I'm not sure that we need more than a small number of indicators, like, for example, in education, the percentage of young people getting good GCSEs, including English or Welsh and maths, for example, and to expect to see that on a rising trajectory. And I think we've got to be clever about that. I think if you look at some of the objectives we've set for local government that really worked, you take two in particular, housing quality and waste. You know, the reality is Wales is ahead of the UK in terms of waste recycling and fourth in Europe. And in terms of housing, well, you know, tenants in 11 out of the 22 local authorities in Wales voted to transfer their housing to a social enterprise or community mutual, and with good results. And the evidence from those is that those, on the whole, have performed better in delivering that housing quality. We've had, I think, some successes. Alan asked about, you know, what's the group on effective services for vulnerable groups. I mentioned the Safer Lives project, which came through work that was done particularly in RCT on victims of abuse, with victims of abuse. Similar work's been done on missing persons in Gwent, and there's been similar work, I think, that's been quite effective now in looking at young people not in education, employment or training. And we have that group, which is chaired, in fact, by a chief constable, Jeff Farrer, from Gwent Police, and that's been very valuable. The private sector, public sector... Look, I spent half my working life before becoming a politician in the private sector. I spent 11 years in the private sector. I spent 5 or 6 years in the third sector and only 4 years in the public sector at the BBC in London. Think we, of course, we have got to learn from the strengths of the private sector. But I think the point I was simply trying to make was the point that Paul made very valuably and very, very well, which is that we are essentially not wanting to see surplus taken out in the form of profit within our public services. And I think we've actually got too many areas where that's happening. If you look at teaching supply, for example, there's money being taken out there that could be redeployed into services. Supply of social workers might be another example of that as well. I devoted pretty much a whole speech at the WCVA in November before you became chief exec, Ruth, on the role of social enterprises and mutuals. And I think there is considerable opportunity there, and I think there is an appetite for those new kinds of models to be developed. So I'm certain that in Wales we will pioneer in those, as we have done historically. In terms of, I'm not going to say a lot more about diversity. Laura and I had an excellent seminar with a whole series of people, very dynamic, young people from a whole series of different backgrounds a couple of weeks ago to talk about how we can drive up diversity in local government. And there is a fairly comprehensive set of actions we've now got underway. But I do want to take on the point about trade unions. I think trade unions have played a really important role, particularly in recent months, in respect to public service transformation. And we have obviously ourselves just closed a consultation on the establishment of a public services staff commission, which was brought to us as an idea by the Wales TUC, Unite, Unison and the GMB. And I'm having monthly meetings with those unions to talk about public service transformation, and they are contributing in a very dynamic way, I think. To clarify on white papers, the white paper that was produced in July when I was on what I like to call my gap year from the government was the Welsh Government's response to Williams in terms and dealt principally with some of the structural issues. The white paper we will be publishing on February the 3rd will be very much about the role of local government, and this is one of the things I think was missing in a sense in the Williams Commission report. It will talk about the role of local government, it will talk about the role of cabinets, the role of councillors, the relationship between backbench councillors and cabinets, relationship between Welsh government and local government. It will talk about the relationship between principal local authorities and town and community councils. It will look at the role of leaders and the role of chief executives. And there is I'm very pleased with the white paper as it's drafted. And as I said today, it will be launched on February the 3rd, and there's a lot, I think, of meat in it. But it won't have a map in it, in case anybody's wondering, by the way. I expect us to be in a position to, for those who are obsessed with structure, to be in a position to publish a map sometime in the summer. And that will give a better idea of where we think we are going. And I take on board very much what John O'Jones and others have said about the question of strength and resilience of particular kinds of authorities. And that is an important element in this. I wanted to end really with just talking a little bit about, one other thing. Public Service Management Wales has become Academy. I became responsible for it about 6 weeks ago. We've had an excellent initial meeting about where we want to take it. I think it's been doing some very, very good work below the radar, actually. And I think that part of the problem is that it's been below the radar, and I think we've got to look now about how we ensure a more integrated approach to its work. I want to end with just a few comments on innovation and best practice. The implementation of best practice, it seems to me, should be the expectation that we have as Welsh Government of everyone in the public service. And there should be no running away from that. But I think the implementation of best practice is sometimes different from, and sometimes different leadership skills are needed as regards best practice and innovation. And we've got to, I think, we've got to have an approach which is about ensuring high expectations, delivery of what the public has a right to expect from their public service, at the same time as, and it, maybe this is the way we have to do it, we have small guerrilla units operating, looking at what kinds of innovation can be taken on that could be transformative. And I spent a lot of time, my special advisor Alex Rawling, just before Christmas in London, talking to a whole series of groups, Nesta, a new local government network, Local Government Association in England, which has got a refreshing approach to all of these issues, the Institute for Government, and the Behavioural Insights team, let me say, which I think, which has come out of the Cabinet Office and is now part of Nesta, which has got some really interesting models to look at and which can be, I think, generalised and I think we can learn from in Wales. But there is a challenge. The reality is everybody knows we have got to reform local government in Wales. We have known, we have had 22 local authorities since John Redwood's day. They don't work. We know that. Everybody now accepts the case for change. A lot of people don't accept that change should happen to them. But it's coming. And what we've got to do is we've got to get on with that at the same time as driving forward service transformation. And that's a challenge. And it will probably require us to be going down two paths simultaneously. Thanks very much indeed.